Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have join us Ann Latham. Ann is a consultant, has worked with a number of organizations, both Fortune 500 companies, as well as colleges and universities. And she is an expert in the area of gaining clarity. She's written a book entitled The Power of Clarity, Unleash the True Potential of Workplace Productivity, Confidence, and Empowerment. She's also authored three other books, and she's got some really great insights she's going to share with us today. I'm looking forward to our conversation with Ann. Give me a little bit of your story, a little bit of your career story. It's always interesting to hear how people have taken a journey as far as in their career and kind of how they've gotten to where they are today.
Yeah, well, mine is circuitous. So, and when I actually, one of the first places I worked was in the Boundary Waters, at a lodge up there, had a great time. But of course, I had to get more serious and get a real job after that. But I spent a good portion of my career as a software engineer and then a development manager after that, kind of worked my way up through the corporate world. And then when I was thinking about possibly becoming an independent consultant, I read a book called Getting Started in Consulting. It scared the living daylights out of me, but I figured if I just do things one at a time, one step at a time, I could do everything in that book. So that got me going. And then before I left the corporate world, I asked my boss, my former bosses, my colleagues, everyone I'd worked with, what is it that I do exceptionally well that's most unusual? And all of the answers came back that basically I create clarity. I bring it, listen to and pick up, you know, vast quantities of information and somehow cut to the chase, find that kernel and figure out how to get everyone on the same page and move things forward. And so I started my company. I called it Uncommon Clarity because that's what my group told me basically I was all about. And then I get out there in the world and I start introducing myself as, yeah, my company's called Uncommon Clarity. And everyone goes, oh, we could use some of that. And of course, as soon as someone, you know, introduces you and said, oh, this is Ann Latham from Uncommon Clarity, I was certain that just complete gibberish would flow out of my mouth. It made no sense whatsoever. But figured it out and was having a great time as a consultant. But it turns out you can't sell clarity because people don't really know what it is. So I ended up doing strategic planning and team effectiveness and process improvements, but I started writing about clarity. And the book that you're talking about, The Power of Clarity, I put everything I can in there about how I create clarity, what it is that I do that other people then can learn how to do the same and get people on that same page, cut to the chase, make things happen, move things forward, and much more effectively and quickly than what goes on in the corporate world generally.
Yeah, I think we talked about, I was just working with another organization, and one of the things they talked about for a new leader that they needed to have was somebody who can provide clarity. And that was their exact words. And I think that was kind of in talking to a number of people within the organization, realizing that clarity is, you talk about as far as that it's uncommon in a lot of organizations. People spend a lot of times as far as being kind of distracted, not focused on kind of what they need to do. And a lot of times they don't know what to do.
Right. And we're not even sure what clarity is. I mean, when people are talking about whether something's clear, they talk about, well, it's, you know, it's a little unclear, it's a little confusing. And it's this little nebulous point that we're a little away from. But the truth is, we need to think about it as a spectrum. And I coined the term disclarity to refer to the absolute lack of clarity on one end of this spectrum, and then uncommon clarity on the other end, because it is uncommon. And as soon as you do that, as soon as you create the spectrum and then ask people, well, how clear is it? it's not just a little ways away from clarity. It's probably way down on the disclarity end of the spectrum, because I think disclarity is our natural state. And so we have a long ways to go. But as long as we just say it's a little unclear, you know, we don't really know where we are.
Before we get too far into our conversation, I want to make sure I ask this question. If you were to spin back time knowing what you know now, what would you tell a 22-year-old Anne?
Oh, wow. Well, a 22-year-old Anne was very confident, very sure of herself, thought she had all the right answers. My way of dealing with the chaos in the workplace was to write down the way things should go. And I expected it, if I wrote it down and passed it out, people should just do it and everything would work smoothly. And it took me almost until, probably really until I started consulting, that I realized that I needed to listen to everybody else. And if people were uncomfortable with the direction we were going, it's because there was something that hadn't been said. There's something we needed to dig out and figure out. What was the risk? What was the concern? What was going on there? And you have to believe that everyone, their opinions do matter. It took me a long time to learn that, but I think it's really important.
Good. In chapter one, you wrote, "We aren't as clear as we think we are, and it's costly."
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the costs that are involved as far as lacking clarity?
That's a good one. So I tell one story in there, for instance, of a young woman who contacted me because she says, I wish I could think faster on my feet. And I said, well, you know, tell me about this. And so we talked, and she was working in a big medical complex. I think she was a nurse, as I recall. And she said, yeah, the big mucky mucks would come down into her wing and ask her how things are going. And she'd go, she wanted to say the right thing and impress them and make them feel good about what's going on. And she was just tongue-tied. And she thought, you know, I just can't think fast on my feet. So in this case, you know, you usually think about when there's a lack of clarity that there's, you know, delays and wasted time and mistakes and all this kind of thing. And so I'm bringing up this example because it's the piece people don't notice. And that's that emotional toll. So here's this young woman who thinks it's all her fault that she can't answer this question. And yet when you think about it, the question, how's it going, is ridiculous. You know, what do they need? What do they want? You know, how will she know when she's done if she tries to explain to them how things are going? But when the source of power asks a vague question, you get someone like her feeling inadequate, feeling, you know, scared, getting tongue-tied, and it's not her fault. It's the person asking the question who's at fault there. But there are loads of other examples in that first chapter about how we do waste time and we do unnecessary work and we throw things in the trash because it wasn't what was asked of us. And when we do something that wasn't asked of us, we do it wrong, or, you know, we head off on a wild goose chase. You can ruin relationships that way. You can ruin your career that way. You know, there's an example in there where I talk about a case where I was hired to come in and coach an individual who had poor judgment, when the reality is this person had spent about 3 weeks working on a project that was triggered by the phrase, look into this. So she looked into it. She went whole hog and came up with a recommendation, and in the end found out that the VP who asked her to do that didn't want her to do any work at all. She wanted her to give her a quick answer that said, this is a dumb idea, because it was another VP's dumb idea, you know? So anyway, the dimensions of waste go far beyond that, you know, the wasted time, wasted productivity, and that kind of thing. And it really hurts.
You talk about the 80-20 rule, which has been used on a lot of different applications, but you talk about, as far as like employees that are spending 80% of their time because they're doing things that are not meeting the goals or the objectives that are there just because there isn't clarity. Talk a little bit about that and what you've seen in organizations.
Yeah. Way back when I was that fairly cocky young employee, I heard that, you know, people waste like 6 hours a day, you know, that it was, they talked about the 80-20 rule way back then. And I thought it was because these people were wasting their time standing around at the water cooler, getting nothing done. And it took me until I got into management to realize that no. They are trying so hard to get the right things done, but you have, and of course that was before email. So take email, we spend, you know, like a third of our time on email and up to a third of our time in meetings. And in between there's changing priorities, you know, second guessing decisions, people not being able to find the support and equipment they need when they need it. So there's a tremendous amount of time that is wasted. And I think it is 80% where you're not able to really focus, really get things done, you know, where you get in the zone and you charge ahead and you knock down walls and get everything accomplished. How often are we in that zone? It's pretty small.
You talked about some of the other things that people get involved in. You mentioned a term, treadmill verbs. Talk a little bit about that. What does that mean?
It's probably my most brilliant creation. Everyone loves it. So they always bring it up. To me, a treadmill verb are things like review, report, share, communicate, the words you see on agendas all the time. The words you hear people ask of, you know, in a meeting, will you please report? And I call them a treadmill verb because there's no way to know when you're done. You never arrive at a destination. You can report forever. You can review forever. You can share forever. You can communicate forever. And these are the words that we are almost taught in business school, I think, that to drive this lack of productivity. So I tell people they should eliminate all the treadmill verbs and replace them with what I call destination verbs. Destination verbs are things that move you forward, like decide. When you make a decision, you've reached a fork in the road and you've decided which way to go. You're ready to move forward. You've unleashed next steps. The second one is plan. You make a plan. When you've got your plan, you're done. You've unleashed next steps. The next one is problem resolution. When you resolve a problem, you've resolved the problem. You've unleashed next steps. The fourth one is list. And a list is kind of a weird one, but if I ask you to make a list of risks, you know when you're done because you put everything on that list you can think of. But not every list is a good list. These lists are they pretty much have to be inputs to decisions, plans, and problem resolutions. So, you know, what is the situation that's causing the problem? List it, you know. So list is a way of moving things forward. And there's two more, confirm and authorize. Those are pretty simple. They're saying, in the case of confirmation, you say, look, I've done this. I'm planning to do this next. Am I on the right track? And all you want is a yes or no. You get the yes and you are ready to move forward. You can unleash next steps. Authorizes the same way. This is what we want to do. Do we have permission to execute? If you get a yes, you've unleashed new next steps and you can move on. So it's like there's a zillion treadmill verbs that add no value, but there are only those six destination verbs that really move things forward. And so that's what needs to be on agendas. That is what needs to be in your conversation. That's what you use when you're talking to your employees to help them get things done.
Yeah. Well, I definitely encourage any new leader, if you spend time just figuring those out, you're going to save yourself a lot of headaches and have a lot more success for sure. I love this phrase you use, meetings in search of a purpose.
Well, this is, you know, so if you go to a meeting and you've got these treadmill verbs on your agenda and people talk and they talk a lot and if they're smart people, they have a lot to talk about. They can talk about lots of really interesting things, but everyone knows everyone's learned, I won't say they know because I don't agree with them, but they've learned that something has to come out of the meeting. So what they do is at the end of the meeting, in order to justify all the time they just spent, they come up with action items. Well, the more intelligent and invested the people in the room were, the more wonderful things they brought up, the more action items they can dream up. But those action items, which fill to-do lists for everyone in the room, don't necessarily have anything to do with the original purpose of the meeting or the strategic priorities of the company. But everyone feels better if they walk away with action items, so that's what they do. And then you wonder why we have too much to do.
You have a diagram in the book, and you talk about the farther you move away from production, clarity curve drops off. Can you kind of describe that and what that means? I thought that was really interesting. I'd never seen that presented in that way, but talk a little bit about that.
So your production processes, whether you're actually a facility, you know, with manufacturing stuff, or you could be a bank and your production processes have to do with processing loans, for instance, the production processes are the processes that deliver value to your customers. As you think about your production processes, that's where we've spent the most time streamlining our processes, making the processes lean. Those are the processes that have the clearest purpose, the clearest procedures, the clearest steps, the clearest requirements. They're really well defined and they're usually very efficient in most organizations, at least who that have tried, you know. So if you think about drawing a double axis chart on your y-axis, you've got the clarity of your processes and purpose and priorities, and think of the other axis of the chart as being the distance from production. So this clarity curve starts out in the production processes really high on the clarity curve. But as you move away from production and you get into development and marketing and sales, and the CEO is on the farthest end away from production. But as you move away from production, the processes are less clear. The priorities are less clear. There's more shifting of priorities. What people have to do and how they do it and with whom they're doing it all becomes less clear. So my clarity curve starts really high on the left and then drops off precipitously as you move away from production. So that's what I call the clarity curve. And then what's interesting is that what really happens when you move away from production is you're also moving away from physical processes. We're physically moving raw materials. We're physically moving crates. We're physically moving loan applications, you know, and as you move away from there, you get into what I call the cognitive processes. These are the processes where you're not moving physical objects, you're moving cognitive objects. You're moving ideas, strategies, plans, decisions. These things are more nebulous. And we don't have good processes for them. So I call this the cognitive zone. And this is where the workers who are the cognitive workers who are interacting and trying to move these cognitive objects work. And there's less clarity there. Therefore, there's a lot more waste there.
You talk about the pursuit of outcomes versus activity. And I think that's where people get on this, you know, I just have to be busy. How are you doing? I'm busy. And that's the wrong, busy is not good always. I mean, you can be busy, but talk a little bit about that. And as a leader,
how you make sure you get the outcome. This connects back to the treadmill verbs versus the destination verbs. Destination verbs have outcomes. Treadmill verbs are activity. I can write reports forever, you know? and there's no way to know when I'm done. So I want everyone to shift their focus to answer that one question. What will be different when we're done? You know, don't start a meeting unless you know what needs to be different when you're done. What are you going to walk out of that meeting with that you didn't have going in? You sit down at your desk, you're going to start working. What needs to be different when I'm done 15 minutes from now, half an hour from now, an hour from now, by lunchtime? And that's the way that kind of specificity and clarity helps you get things done much more quickly. Making that decision about what is that thing that needs to be different an hour from now quadruples 100 times the likelihood that you will actually achieve it. Otherwise, what we tend to do is sit down and kind of wander in. And we wander in and start doing things. You know, we might even start working on things on our to-do list as we're making our to-do list and don't even finish the to-do list. So we haven't even decided what's the one thing we need to do now in the next hour. So leaders need to ask the questions that help people focus on what needs to be different when we're done. What do you have to have done in the next hour? What's your contribution to this? And as a leader, what do I have to do to help you remove the barriers so that, you know, we can unleash next steps together? It's all about unleashing next steps. That's outcome-driven behavior. That's not activity, you know, and those steps. I mean, I suppose people could say, yeah, you know, my next step is to walk on the treadmill for an hour, but that's not what we're looking for.
Sure. Well, I love, and you've got so many great lines, and I need to write these on my whiteboard. Don't argue about the route before agreeing on the destination. And I think that's just.
We do that all the time.
Yeah, we do.
And that's what I call alternative-centric decision-making, where we argue about our alternatives, where we haven't figured out what we're trying to accomplish yet. So, I'm not in favor of pros and cons kind of arguing, because you're comparing things without saying, wait a minute, what's really important here? What are our objectives? What are our limitations? What are the priorities? So if you figure out what needs to be different when we're done first, then you won't spend a lot of time talking about the different paths to getting there and, you know, arguing about the alternatives first.
And I think for our listeners that are new leaders, trying to develop that trust with your team. And I think in the book, use process clarity to create trust. And yes, as a new leader, to put those processes, talk a little bit about that, of developing that trust within your team by putting those processes in place.
Yeah. One of the key components of clarity is process clarity. And that is clarity over time. what are the steps we're going to use to get somewhere? And so, for instance, if you're trying to delegate a task to someone, you don't throw it over the wall and just let them get lost in it. And you don't micromanage them. You talk about the process. You know, what do you see as the steps moving forward here to make this happen? And where do you need me? So instead of saying, okay, you know, go work on this and let's check back in every Monday morning, it's no, you know, what's the process and where do you need my input? It might not be on Monday morning. It might, you know, the first question might be, what are the objectives of this project? Why don't you go off and draft those and then bring them back and I'll see if there's anything I have to add. You know, what then the next step? What materials are you going to need? You go off and take a stab at it and then bring it back to me. And depending on the level of the employee, you know, they can do more or less before they check in with you. But where do you need to check in? But if you help them and figure out the process, they're going to be more efficient and more effective moving along. And it gives you a chance to figure out where you want to check in, where you want them to come to you, where you need to put input into the process. So it's that focus on the process that really helps, because it builds trust, because all your concerns are about the process, not about the person's capabilities. So instead of, you know, I don't trust you to do this, or should I trust him to do that? You don't even have those conversations in your head or with them. You know, it's here, why don't you start by telling me what you think the steps are? Go figure that out. Come back. Let's talk about it. I might have some steps to add. So it's always putting the attention on that process so that they are focused on the process, which helps them do better. You're focused on the process, so it's where does it logically make sense for you to help, for them to do it on their own, for you to check in. You see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
You talk about you can have only one priority at a time. And I think a lot of times we hear the phrase, what are your priorities? And
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that as a leader.
The word priority comes from a Latin word that is singular only. There was never any plural of it. And the plural came along. Someone made that word plural, someone who was really evil back in like the 1950s or something. So suddenly, instead of having a priority, we have lots of priorities, and frankly, way too many priorities to even call them priorities. You know, so, but the truth is, you know, as much as people think they can multitask and all this, the more you jump around from thing to thing to thing, the less efficient you are. And at any given moment, you really can only be working on one thing. So you get back to that question I always ask, what needs to be different when I'm done, like an hour from now? Give me one thing, you know, and even if it's only 15 minutes, what needs to be different 15 minutes from now? And then I drive through and make that one thing happen. And that's how you move things forward.
Yeah, that's great advice. Well, we could spend several hours talking about this topic. And I know you have some other books that you've written. You've got The Disconnect Principle, The Clarity Papers, Uncommon Meetings, which, again, you probably dive a lot deeper into how to have better meetings. And definitely those are great topics for our listeners.
Yeah. And Uncommon Meetings actually is very short. It's 7 quick tips.
Okay.
So it's a good one for people who just want to focus on meetings.
Great. Any other books that you recommend? Definitely encourage people to go out and pick up copies of your books, but any others that have made an impact on you?
Absolutely. They should read my books. But business-related book I read recently that I recommend is Start With What Works by Andy Bass. I like to read a lot of fiction. I think that helps me see the world through different people's eyes. A fiction book I read recently that I really enjoyed is called Lessons in Chemistry by Bonnie Garmus. And then I also read Outlive by Peter Attia, which is a great book. You're nodding, maybe you've read it, but it's a great book about the difference between extending our life expectancy versus extending our healthiness and what it is that leads to our downfall in terms of being healthful and active and strong. So I really enjoyed that one. That's a great book.
Well, that kind of ties into our next question. Outside of work, what do you do to recharge? We talked a little bit about, I know at least one of your passions that we talked about before we got started.
Yeah. Well, I'm a super avid hiker and pickleball player. So I really love to hike. I spent September hiking through the Dolomites hut to hut in Northern Italy, which is the Italian Alps. That's the kind of thing I absolutely love. I've been doing that a ton anyway. And then all winter and in between hiking, it's pickleball. It's so addictive and it's so wonderful.
Yeah, that's great. Any parting advice you would give to a new leader?
Whoa, one parting advice. I guess I would say if you learn, like my book, The Power of Clarity, the subtitle is Unleash the True Potential of Workplace Productivity, Confidence, and Empowerment. So I almost want to say something about being compassionate and being empathetic and learning how to really empower your people. It not only builds their confidence, but it builds your confidence. And so I think you really have to learn how to think it through, think things through and see it from other people's perspectives. And my most recent book, The Disconnect Principle, is a great book in terms of teaching you how to look at situations differently. And it actually eliminates difficult conversations as a result. Instead of learning how to master difficult conversations, I say, no, step back, use the disconnect principle to eliminate those conversations and to enter into true partnerships with people where you are empathic and everyone walks out with greater sense of confidence and strength.
Wow. That's great. Well, Anne, I sure appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to talk to us, and I wish you continued success with all you're doing and helping people become better at what they do. And definitely look forward to your next book. I got to get through. I've gotten through one, but I need to get the others read here in the near future. And appreciate you all of your insights.
Great. Thank you very much, Mark. It's fun talking to you. I really appreciate your enthusiasm.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.